Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Every Tuesday, Mina highlights the winners and losers from the weekend with Dominique Foxworth. Then later in the week, she's joined by different expert guests to look ahead to the next round. That's The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is the time of week where we have a guest join us. Check him out on Peacock, Brother from Another. I mean, you can't do it no more this year, but the man was on the Amazon Prime Thursday Night Football broadcast. And that hairline still got me hating Michael Smith. What's going on, big dog?
Good to see you, big time. How you feeling, man?
Hey.
We didn't talk all season, right?
We didn't talk on the pod. You was on the road. Making it happen. But to answer your question, how I'm feeling, man, I feel like I got 2 jobs.
There you go. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it ain't nothing wrong with that on payday.
You know what I'm saying?
But at 5 o'clock every day, hey, you still ain't done with both jobs. It registers sometimes, like your notes.
Hey, but listen, you and I both know what the alternative feels like, right?
Oh, that's real. That's real. That's real. So, that's real.
So,
nah, the thing is, I make an adjustment. Like, I go from just doing this podcast to doing this other TV show, Game Theory, Fridays at 11 on HBO and HBO Max, and that's a different kind of job, there, brother.
Yeah. It's that brain of yours is working overtime because it's like. It's not just the increased amount of bandwidth. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of bandwidth. Like it's a whole, you almost had to like shift your thinking in some respect, from a production standpoint, I imagine.
Yeah, well, it's that, and you got to do all the media, but this is the big thing, right? So we do this thing on the show, we call it the Man on the Street segment, and man, mm-hmm. James Davis early was like, yo, we need to get something with Bomani in the street, talking to the people. And I was like, okay, we'll give it a go. And the first time we did it, man, we did a test shoot and it was like 15 degrees outside. Like it is as cold as I have been in New York City.
The Canada Goose. And
Yes. I had my goose on and they had the nerve to complain about my look. And I'm like, are you high? It's like 50, a whole bunch of because that wasn't there in 15 degrees was like, I ain't like how you look. But anyway.
Right. Standing from inside the office.
From California. So I'm like, all right, whatever, right? And so we shot it, and it was a miserable, terrible night, and they cut it up, and they sent it to the suits, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put it on the show, and people loved it. And I was like, so we're going to be out here shooting this cold man on the street as long as we got a show, huh? And the answer is yes. And y'all that's the one.
Y'all would love this.
Right.
This is the thing y'all would love. Right?
And on top of it, because it looks cool, we got to do it at night, right? Because people like the way it looks at night. You know, the problem with shooting it at night, you got to do it at night. And when you do it at night, ain't nobody burning no work day all the way before. I say all that to say the man on the street is certainly for the people.
The people. There you go. This is about your gift to us.
Yeah, it ain't for you. Show ain't for your boy.
But no, I tell you what, though. But you know, as a New Yorker, and this just allows you to expand your repertoire when it comes to your fashion taste. Now you can break out the scarves, you get the
beanie. Why do I have to do that though?
Why can't you just be in the confines of a cozy
office? All I'm saying is, in theory, I could break out all that fashion in the summer, but you don't because it's not cold.
The burden of being a superstar. Such a heavy burden you bear.
That ain't the burden of being a superstar. It's homeless people out there complaining about it being 15 degrees. Now, granted, they don't get to go inside at the end of the night, but it don't change the fact.
Yeah.
Let me tell you all this. You just hit me with the what about the starving children in Ethiopia? And I'm a half step away from being like, have you ever seen Sam Kennison's routine about the starving children in Ethiopia? That's how I feel about that cold. They be like, other people don't get to come inside from the cold. Well, they should break into something and then make it happen. Yeah,
listen,
you know.
Part of our relationship, first of all, this reminds me, you talked about Thursday Night Football. I have never been as cold as I was in Green Bay. I couldn't feel my
I
lips.
can
I
only
couldn't
imagine.
speak. I don't know what I was saying. I had the goose on. I had the gloves on. It was so I do feel you, but you know this, in all seriousness, part of the nature of our relationship is on many levels, not every level, but on many levels, I can relate. So I don't take
Yes.
what you're saying as complaining or being
Yes.
ungrateful. I get it. I
Yeah.
understand where you're coming from on
I
all of this,
appreciate I appreciate
but
that.
we appreciate it. We appreciate the effort, most
Yes,
important. It
you're
is for the
welcome.
people.
You're
Yes.
welcome. The Green Bay
Yes.
thing is interesting because, like, I was looking at the Man on the Street stuff that we shot for the first couple episodes, and it was real cold that night. And you could hear it in my words, and you could see it in my face. I'd be like, "So, what do you think about?" And like, I ain't no room for movement. Ain't
Yeah.
none of that. Like, I don't know how them cats be playing.
But let me ask you this. When it's kind of time to have a discussion, since it's such a hit now, well, which streets do you have to talk to men on? Can you talk to the men on the streets in Buenos Aires? Can you talk to the
Yeah,
men
that's
on the
a
streets
yeah.
in Paris? Can you
Yeah,
talk
that's
to the men on the
exactly.
street in Miami? Like, can
That's
you take this
exactly.
tropical?
Yeah, that's exactly what I need to do. I need to take our
Yeah.
entire budget and book the Man on the Street World Tour.
You know what I'm
That
saying?
let me tell you this. If we had the Man on the Street World Tour, let me tell you what I wouldn't be wearing for the rest of the show. Expensive suits. Or they might be expensive suits purchased by Bomani Jones. It'd be a completely different ball game. But we'll switch
Yeah.
gears. Just as we're getting ready to start this, your man Tom Brady looking to be out on Miami Beach. I know those buildings. I know that saying that he out there. He sent out the "I'm retiring" video. We already did this last year, so I don't even
Yeah.
like feel the need to get deep into legacy stuff and everything else.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
I am glad to have you here because for those who are not aware, you covered Tom Brady from literally day one, right? Like y'all were basically rookies together with the Patriots.
He was
He was in
so
year
when I
two, right?
when I was an intern is when I first met him. So I was an
Got it.
intern at the Boston Globe in 99 and 2000. His rookie year was 2000. When I graduated from Loyola, New Orleans in 2001, and I came on, I went back to the Patriots beat, which I had been dabbling in the summers before. And I wouldn't dare say that I got to know him well. We were just two young dudes. But you know how the Patriots organization is. I mean, everybody, you don't have to have the cover to know how tight they are with access. And I was young and I was nobody. He was young and nobody. So we kind of like connected on being young and nobody. And I mean relative. Like he was somebody. I mean, he'd only played at Michigan, you know what I'm saying? And been a big name there.
And
And
you
an NFL player.
was a Boston Globe first round draft pick. It's okay to say it.
I was. Thank you for that. And so, we would, have small talk every now and then. But I mean, he was fourth at one point, man. It was Bledsoe, it was John Freeze, it was your man Michael Bishop.
Yes, my man, Michael Bishop.
You
Michael,
know.
Michael Bishop sitting around every day being like, that could have been me.
Dude, Michael Bishop, I mean, well, listen, that is a that you serious. Like you're joking, but as you're serious. I mean, Michael Bishop might have been ahead of his time for all we know, and we can have that conversation as well. But yeah, man, I mean, I've always counted my blessings. Like I'll make it about me for a second. It's just like, I don't consider myself, the most talented, the most knowledgeable, the most articulate. I may have the strongest hairline, but beyond that, it's like I was very, very fortunate to be where I was when I was. It's the same with people in the night with the cover of the 90s Bulls. Or the 80s 49ers or any other dynasty, to be a part of that got people reading my stuff that maybe otherwise would not have, even if it wasn't a Boston Globe. And that obviously led to ESPN. So I always felt privileged to be a part of it on the ground floor. And the thing about Brady, man, is just like looking back, it's just, it really was a surprise to everybody but him. Because I don't know if you've ever done this. You probably haven't. But like every now and then I find myself asking a dumbass question. I'm like, damn, man, like that was a dumb question. Or maybe just in hindsight, given who he turned out to be, it was dumb. Maybe I'm being too hard on myself. But I remember just making that small talk, and I was like, "Yo, man, like, I think I asked him something about being nervous." And he looked at me like, "Played in the big house. I played at Michigan. What I'm nervous? What I'm nervous going? I guess like this is what I do. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You kind of are. You know what I mean?" So it was the moment was never too big for him, even at the beginning. He was always going to take the job, whether Drew Bledsoe damn near died or not. He was going to be the quarterback because it was clear to Bill Belichick throughout the offseason and in the training camp in 2001 that the better quarterback for that team was Tom Brady. Even when Bledsoe came back from injury, it was a controversy everywhere except for in Bill Belichick's mind, because once he had the opportunity to put in Tom Brady, he was never going back. Brady was never giving it back. And so it's, you know, as unlikely a story as it is being pick number 199, sixth round pick, the makeup of the man made his journey to being the greatest of all time make all the sense in the world, as unlikely as it was back in 2001.
Yeah, and I think something that kind of gets lost is the legend of Tom Brady really is entirely about the makeup, right? And the reason I say that is, how many yards did he throw for in that first Super Bowl? Was it like 145 or something like
that's
that?
About right.
Yeah.
That's about right. One touchdown pass.
Right. And keep it in mind, that's with the march at the end of the game down the field. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a Super Bowl MVP because somebody had to win the Super Bowl MVP. But I remember watching that game and they were tied and they got the ball deep in their own territory. Maybe a touchback, right? They had it at their 20. And I'm like, all right, you're going to kneel this thing out and go to overtime.
That's
and
what John Madden
is on the call.
Yes.
Even after they made the field goal to win the Super Bowl, John Madden's like, yo, glad that worked out for you. But and that is not that wasn't typical John Madden behavior. And by the way, it wasn't no super great drive, right?
No.
A couple of short passes to J.R. Redmond.
Kevin Falk. That was a 48-yard field goal, which back then, even for Adam Vinatieri, was not a gimme. It was not right now, it's like, if you ain't making 48 yarders, you bug it. Like, back then, that was like, holy smokes, he gonna make this.
Right, and that drive didn't have any defining play, right? Like, it didn't have a helmet catch. It didn't have anything like that.
Yeah.
Right, just check downs and go down the field. Like, there was no reason to think you were watching one of the greatest players of all time there, right?
No.
There was a lot of quarterback narrative stuff that was tied up in it. But even throughout that season, what he did that was important and I think got lost about the difference between him and Drew Bledsoe is it really came down to Drew Bledsoe just took too many sacks. Like, if you look at the year before, that 2000 season, Bledsoe was not very good, and it wasn't looking good once they were in there. And what we didn't realize, I think, at the time of watching that team was that was a potentially all-time great defense on that other side. And so if you just chilled out and didn't mess it up, everything was going to be all right.
Do you know the phrase that's carried a negative connotation? I don't know if it still does. I think game manager, man. Like, and Brady made game manager sexy. Like, that is the number one job of a quarterback is managing the game. It's taking care of the ball, is understanding the situation and executing accordingly. And so for a long time, oh, he ain't nothing but a game manager. Like, that's a bad thing, you know? Yeah. And so his game management skills is what separated him from Drew Bledsoe, even though obviously Brady was a much younger player.
Yeah, and he managed, to me, what I think is maybe the most impressive part. As I said, we're not going to really do this, but still, I think this is a part that gets that idea.
Hey, man, he played for 23 years. There's a lot to say about the dude.
Right. Like, I don't think this was discussed that much the last time he quit his job, but he held it down.
Is that the reason you phrase it that way?
Yeah. I mean, he quit his job. It happens, right? Like it's what it is. He about to go get another job. You know what I'm saying? Like he ain't retiring. It's like retiring from the army. You get that pension and then you go get another job.
Do you think Tom Brady will, wait, don't lose your thought, but do you think Tom Brady will be doing Man on the Street segments?
No, I don't think
at night in the cold.
Don't see it. But he held it down. Basically, he developed a superstar's resume and then started playing like an actual superstar. Right. Like, if you think about those first 3 years, to me, he didn't really get to be like, oh, he's getting here now till that year four when they won that Super Bowl against the Eagles. Like, that Super Bowl he played against the Eagles out of those first three he played was by far, to me, the best one.
The second win against Carolina, that was Corey Dillon. Both of those years, 2003 and 2004, that was a running ground and pound football team where their best receiver was Deion Branch. I remember
I also think Troy Brown is like,
oh, totally underrated.
Oh my God.
Well, Troy Brown played quarterback and punt returner. Like, Troy Brown was a great receiver who they played at quarterback against Peyton Manning playoffs.
Yes. Okay, you're right. All I'm saying is how Julian Edelman become a star and Troy Brown. Oh, my bad. I know. Anyway,
It's that, but it's also Brady, the game evolved and Brady. Yes. Brady evolves with the game. Like Brady,
that's
like
fair.
The way the game was played in Brady early years, early 2000s, like the advent of the spread, obviously the RPOs didn't work with him, but the implementation of more of a college offense, more of a spread offense, Brady adapted to that and they exploited that. Like I remember the first game in the history of Gillette Stadium. It was the season opener after they won that Super Bowl 36 against the Rams at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, the year before, it was game management. As Ron Borges, then the Boston Herald, used to write, the Patriots were throwing sideways. It was a bunch of screens to Antoine Smith and J.R. Redmond, who you mentioned, and Kevin Falk and some Troy Brown stuff, and David Patton and Terry Glenn, rest in peace, had a couple of big plays early in the season before he was done. It was like Brady, they were hiding Brady. First game of the 0-2 season against Bill Cowher's Pittsburgh Steelers, knowing they couldn't run against Casey Hampton and them, empty. They went empty, and nobody was doing that back then. They just went empty. And Brady just bink, 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 just dinking and dunking at these short passes, a bunch of yak. So he's very much self-made, was not a great deep ball thrower early in his career, ended up making his arm stronger, getting his body right. We all know about the famous combine picture, becoming a deep ball thrower, see the Randy Moss years. Remember they tried their Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski, two tight end offense. I mean, the evolution of the Patriots offense along with the game, along with Tom Brady, is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I always think the most interesting quirk of Tom Brady's career is that, to me, the best of Tom Brady is 2007 through 2013.
Okay.
How many Super Bowls they win in that run?
None.
Yeah. None. That's none. The wildest thing to me. When we talk about Tom Brady, he did the winner guy thing early. He did the winner guy thing later. When he was at his best, now granted, in that run, they went undefeated. They had another Super Bowl
season.
Went to a couple. But as we talk about the quarterback win thing, it's so wild. When he was at his best, they did not win Super Bowls. Now, that 2007 season, we don't talk about it very much because it ultimately ended the way that it did, right? But I need to walk people through this because it dawned on me that, you know, we now at a point where we got some youngsters who may be listening to this podcast and they can't fully appreciate what that season was, all right?
Yeah.
Now, I know if I get these details wrong, you'll know that I'm getting these wrong, but I think I got it right. Okay.
I'm pretty sure you do.
Randy Moss played 2 years with the Raiders. I was so excited about Randy Moss playing with the Raiders that I went and bought a pair of shoes to match a white Raiders Randy Moss jersey that I ultimately did not get. No, I didn't. I ultimately didn't get it because I went broke. But my thing was it was going to be Randy Moss going long, right? Because that's all the Raiders do is go long, right? In a Norv Turner offense. And he had 1,000 yards the first year, but then the second year, it all went to hell that year. And it's one of those where it's like, oh, Randy Moss don't play hard. No, Randy Moss stopped playing hard in that team when he realized nobody else was really invested. And a story a former player told me about that team was the coaches told Randy, go long every play. And Kerry Collins had the audacity to not throw him the ball because he was mad because Randy Moss wasn't sight reading. Like, okay, whatever. So people thought Randy Moss was finished at something like age 29.
Well, now this is not me doing the moth hand up thing. This is me saying, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes,
I was one of those people.
Yeah. People thought Randy Moss was finished and Bill Belichick managed to get Randy Moss for a fourth round pick. Because one of the things I love about Bill Belichick is people got all kinds of ideas about what Bill Belichick will and will not put up with. Let me tell you what he won't put up with. Dudes who can't play. Let me tell you what he will put up with. Guys like Randy Moss. We only know Bill Belichick's name because of Lawrence Taylor, right? So he gets Randy Moss And you stop and you think about it, and you're like, yeah, the best receivers Tom Brady had had heretofore were Troy Brown and Deion Branch. And now he has Randy Moss, who people think is finished. Their first game.
That Jets game?
That's what I say. That first game of the season was against the Jets. Okay.
And I just remember that
and it was in New York, right? It was at the Meadowlands, whichever one it was.
Yes, it was.
I just remember one play. Randy Moss is split out wide to the right. Yeah. And he runs, I don't know what you call it, a post, a crossing pattern, whatever.
Right down the middle. Yeah.
But he ran long enough, far enough, and fast enough that he ran by three people. Yeah. Three people. And Tom Brady just chucked that thing up there. And I just remember being like, oh, guys,
this is
going to be a problem. And that
he got the end zone and hit him with that. I was like, oh, Lord.
That year, they were such a problem. From day one, they were such a problem. Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes. After all that I told you before about him managing it, even then, he was like, he had gotten a lot better. But it was just like, I mean, but what's the ceiling on this really?
Right.
Right. Ooh, that Moss was caught, the ceiling.
Moss caught 23 that year, right? Which, like, I mean, look, Jerry Rice catching 22 and 15 is just stupid. But like,
No, hold on. It was Moss had 22 because Randy, Rice had 22 total touchdowns that year. He had 21 receiving and one on a reverse, right?
Oh, okay. I don't know why I thought he had 22 receiving. Okay.
Yeah. He had 22 total. Okay. Hold on. It wasn't 21 and 15. It was 21 and 12.
That was the strike year.
It was the strike.
He missed 3 games too.
No, it was that 15 includes games where replacement players.
That had 21 touchdowns in 12.
Dude, 21 touchdowns in 12 games. Just like I want to say, Reggie White had something like 22 sacks in 12 games. You know why that happened? I'll tell you why that happened. I have a great theory specifically on Jerry Rice, and it probably applies in a different way to Reggie White. It's the strike. These cats don't think they're coming back, right? You remember when
they caught them slipping?
You remember when they came back from that lockout in NBA in 99, and it looked like they thought it was going to be a snow day, and then it didn't snow? That same thing happened to the whole league. But while the league is like, I get back when I get back. What you think Jerry Rice was doing? Jerry
Rice
was doing what Jerry Rice do right now.
Catching bricks.
That whole way. He out catching bricks right now. He was running up that hill. So everybody else is playing themselves into shape. And Jerry Rice is out there.
Well, because I also remember, like, I mean, people forget Jerry Rice, 85, 86 Jerry Rice was not the Jerry Rice that would only be the greatest player regardless of position of all time. So he had a hell of a lot to prove. But no, I was say about Moss.
Yeah.
Bro, I remember, like, I've had my share of takes that I like back, plays that I like back. I'm so glad that I wasn't on television when I said this. I will never forget being in a fantasy football draft prior to the said 2007 season. And I'm in Boston at the time, so it's a bunch of, like, you know, New Englanders, Patriots fans, whatever. Somebody took Randy Moss. I'm like, Randy Moss, he ain't gonna do
and he went out there and had one of the greatest seasons that anybody has ever had.
But I think two things we should appreciate about Randy Moss. Like Bill, and you talk about Bill Belichick, he loves people who love football. Randy Moss loves football. So I play what I want to play, straight cash, homie, all the stuff, whatever, is like, it's like Randy Moss loved to compete and loved football. He was also brilliant. He was a brilliant person and football player. And so many a receiver have come into New England, established receiver have come into New England and struggled, young receivers and established receivers. This dude picked up that offense like that. Okay. That's not an easy thing to do. And then also from a personal level, one of my favorite videos, and I know you don't spend the whole thing on Moss, but we can talk about Moss all day. You've seen it where he's in Bill Belichick's office trying to convince him to have a Halloween party.
Yes.
He's like, it's the greatest holiday. It's candy. We're more candy. But it's like, but Randy had that, you know, they had that rapport. Randy had that kind of vibe with people. Like, you know, so yeah, man, that was one of the greatest things to ever happen to both those guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you're right. Brady's peak did not result in the championships that, you know, when he had the complete team laying on deck. Go ahead, yeah. I'm sorry.
Now, let me jump right fast. One last Randy Moss story.
Yeah.
Is the NFL Films clip. I've only seen it one time. I hope it's not one of those things that I imagine, but I don't think so. But NFL Films did this really funny video on the coin toss and like the superstitions and how serious some people are about their approach to the coin toss, right? And like what they're going to choose. And so they show Randy Moss on the sideline talking to Dante Culpepper. Hey, mate, tails. Always call tail. Just like, just like PlayStation. Always call tails. And so they go out there. I'm assuming they called heads. And Culpepper called heads. And they lost. And Randy Moss was not happy. And they coming off the sideline. I told you, call tails. They don't play PlayStation like we do. Totally concluded. He had a system to call it.
Only call tails.
Based on PlayStation, just like PlayStation.
Just like PlayStation. Man, that is like
I've only talked to Randy Moss.
He was a PlayStation character.
Yeah. We've all
it was like he was playing PlayStation. Everybody else was playing real football. He was playing a video game.
My favorite, like I only have one actual in-person Randy Moss story. And you remember this wasn't the pep rally. This was upfronts in 2017, 2018, one of those. It was upfronts. And we going in, I don't know if it was some kind of rehearsal or something. Like, I don't feel like it was the actual meeting. Like, the upfronts were the day after. And so we're there, and I'm walking in, and I'm on the escalator behind Randy Moss. And he gets to some table, and there's some food out. And I guess it's, you know, I guess the food was for everybody. I don't remember exactly what. But Randy Moss stopped and looked at the lady and said, how long has this food been sitting out here? How long has this food been here? Like while he was definitely curious about the free food.
Yeah.
He had questions about, I was like, thank you for taking that one off for everybody.
My only Randy Moss direct encounter, he either called me beige or half breed, one of the two. I don't know which one it was. This was early live stream days. I don't know what the platform was. Probably something that's no longer in existence, whatever it was. He was live streaming something. And I don't even remember the story. Like, just like I forgot that they had three replacement games in 87. I'm getting old, though. It was somehow my name came up. He's like, you mean the half breed? Or something like that. Or, you know, a big, I don't know what it was. I'm like, this one.
No, that's
no chill.
Dog, you gotta understand though, man. From cats
that's
from
West
places,
Virginia.
That's it, from places like West Virginia.
Yeah,
like,
man.
Like I am sure
I
am sure that a biracial person from West Virginia may have felt as though that was a slur.
Yeah.
Randy Moss, and you, by the way, you were correct. Jerry Rice did have 22 receiving touchdowns, but I was correct. It was 12.
The 12 games, yeah.
It was still 12 games. But
because you know, I remember John Forkey. I don't know how I brain farted on that. Yes. I remember the 87 strike, that 87 strike year. That was the state's year right there.
Yes, but
that was the first division title, I believe.
Yeah, but Randy Moss, that dude right there, he thinks that's just what you, at least at that point, that's just what you call those people.
Yeah, like, that's another word for light skin. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, man, I was just flattered that he ever actually referenced me. It was all good.
I didn't think he was offended, but I'm just saying for the listeners out there, some of whom I think recoiled, I'm just here to tell you. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just telling you, the country operate differently than a lot of places.
Yeah. Not the USA country, the country.
The country. Yes. Right. Now, Brady gonna get that Fox job, or he's got that Fox job. That's gonna be interesting. I've mentioned this very briefly, I think, last week with Dominique, or I may have been talking to somebody else about this, but I have been fascinated watching Gronk, who definitely is out here like, I would like to be taken seriously now. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there was a lot of money to be made for him letting people believe that he was dumber than he actually was, but like, I am fascinated by the athletes who get on television and the ones who really are out here. They're not just trying to get a check or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like, that dude's out here, like, try to bring it. Tom Brady gonna be on TV, and I have to be honest, that sounds incredibly boring.
Yeah, I don't have high expectations for him. I mean, look, we talked about Jerry Rice. Many a great, I'm not saying he's gonna be Jerry Rice, But many a great player has tried and failed on television, just as many a scrub, quote unquote, or bust, or career backup, or nobody has flourished on television. The type of player you are and the type of player that you presented yourself as in controlled environments such as press conferences and your own podcast nowadays, or locker room access, ain't got shit to do with how you're going to be as an analyst. And so I don't have great expectations. I think he'll work hard at it. That's another thing. Does he want to do it because they paying him so much money to do it? Or does he want to do it because he really wants to do it? Because you and I also know the athlete who thinks it's easy. Or who is just like, yeah, it's something to do, you know, to stay close to the game, but I'm not really viewing this as my craft. I'm not viewing this as my profession. I'm not approaching it with the same intensity and commitment as I did the game that I once played, because I just, it doesn't do it for me. So if he approaches it and takes it seriously and tries to get better at it, I think he can be more than capable just because of his wealth of knowledge. I honestly just don't know if this is something that he wants to do or it's just something to do.
Yeah, and I try to avoid like media criticism for obvious reasons. We're a bit compromised, right?
Yeah,
like
right? Working.
But something that is going to be very interesting for Tom Brady. And you know what? I imagine you can understand what I'm talking about here too. You and I are similar age and we got some places early in the game, right? You had that moment where you used to be like, you was at the Globe. You're the youngest dude in every room you walk in. Then you look up one day and you're the old man at the club. Like, when did that happen? And I'm sure for Tom Brady, they had that point. Well, now he's about to be on Fox NFL Sunday, where he is by far the youngin. Like, that's a broadcast that needed a younger person. They basically, the only real change, James Brown now went to CBS. He used to be at Fox. They replaced him with Kirk Menefee. Otherwise, that was basically the same broadcast team that they got when they got the contract in 1994. Jimmy Johnson is almost 80 years old. Like, Terry Bradshaw is up there in that space.
Yeah.
Howie Long has been retired for almost 30 years now, right?
Yeah.
Strahan's a kid old there, but even Strahan was drafted, I want to call it 7-8 years before Tom Brady, right?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of looking at him like, we need an infusion of what counts as youth on linear television over there. Like, if I'm the producer of that, I don't just want Tom Brady to be good. Like, I need you to get in here. Like, I think he'll be good because the way they do the broadcast, everybody just kind of hanging out and like bumping elbows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no. If he don't want to do it, Fox got a problem.
Yeah. That's interesting. And even on CBS, they may have, I mean, Cowher ain't been out the game that long, but other than Nate Burleson, that's an older crowd. And that's
Cowher been out the game for over 2006? 15 years. His last year.
Yeah. But I mean, relative to like Jimmy Johnson or Howie Long or Terry, but it's still old.
Yeah.
Which is, not to be self-serving or not like that. Well, it's not self-serving because, it's not my company and it wasn't my decisions. But it's one of the cool things about the Amazon crew on Thursday night is everybody, I mean, Tony Gonzalez is the oldest dude. Everybody else just left the game. I think all these networks need to, and I'm not trying to put anybody out the pasture, but I think all these networks need to look at, the audience, whether or not it's truly reflected, not just, from a gender or a race perspective, but age. I mean, all these desks are old, all of them.
Yeah, but what happens is people become familiar.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like,
you grew up on him.
Yeah,
now, you mentioned John Madden. We never looked at John Madden as old.
No.
When we started watching it.
Yo, I don't know about you, but I don't know if I've ever been more defensive of a stranger, an old white man, no less, than I would be with youngsters who try to like throw some slick shade at John Madden at the end. I'm like, no, dog. I don't think you understand. This is the greatest of all time. There's John Madden is out here like how everybody's player for number two on the greatest receiver of all time.
Yeah.
It's the gap
between John Madden and number two is so it's much bigger close. Between the gap than between Jerry Rice and Randy Moss.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is John Madden and everybody else, because everybody else is kind of like, well, you can make an argument for a lot of people. There is no Jerry Rice, Randy Moss. It's like John Madden and take your pick.
Right. You know? No, John Madden, I can only imagine what it was like the first time the TV producers heard John Madden, like do a screen test and you look at each other like.
Yeah.
Hey, boys.
I going think to show you.
Might be on to something. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the Super Bowl. I want to leave me some bullets in the chamber for what I talked to Dominique.
Oh, I'm sure you got plenty.
About the black quarterbacks and all this. But I do want to ask you this, just as an observer of football and of life, can you imagine being a 49er defensive player once you realize that we are down to a quarterback that I didn't even know was on the team?
Bro, Josh Johnson has – How many teams is it now that he's played for?
I think it was 14 or 15.
And that's just in the NFL.
Yeah, but
my guy has played in several other leagues. Well, yeah, been rostered. But, I mean, that's like – and I don't even know if that includes, like, being cut in camp or
it does. You know,
practice squad. It does? Okay, cool. But he's also been, like, in other leagues, in other yes. minor leagues or whatever. Like, he is just – I mean, I remember when he was at San Diego State with Harbaugh.
Hold on. San Diego.
I'm sorry.
Not even San Diego State.
Not the Aztecs, right. Not Marshall Faulk. Not the Aztecs. Yes. San Diego with Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh. And so, yeah, man, like, but honestly, the Josh Johnson is kind of like, in many respects, the real example of how far we've come when it comes to
said.
Black quarterbacks.
That's what I said.
getting that backup quarterback money as a black quarterback was really the next frontier. Right.
Well, hold on. This is a level beyond backup quarterback money. This is a job they could literally give to any other human on earth. Right? Because by the time you get there, it don't even matter. Like, I honestly think as a football team, when you got to go down to the number three or four quarterback, you need to treat that like when you at the office and the air conditioner broke. We all going home. There ain't no point in being here. We just going to be in here hot and mad for no goddamn reason. Like, there's no reason to do this. The air conditioner just broke. Let's go home. But a job that you could give to anybody, always go to a white man. Nope. John Johnson.
That's exactly right.
He must be cool as hell, dog. People must love having him around.
I mentioned, that's what the backup quarterback is in many respects. I mentioned that when it comes to Amazon. I mentioned Amazon a second ago. Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Ryan Fitzpatrick started a lot of games for a lot of teams. But the journeyman, you know what kind of a politician, and I don't say that as a negative, you know what kind of a politician, what kind of a people person, what kind of a team player, how popular you have to be a backup quarterback in several places. Like, it requires, you gotta get along with the head coach, the quarterback coach. You know, the offensive coordinator, you got to manage the personality of the starting quarterback. You got to be it's just like it takes a special kind of person to be that. And really, there are many a white quarterback who has made a generational wealth off of being a career backup. That's real progress, is seeing depth charts full of, remember when Shaq Harrison and Jacksonville, they were all black?
Baltimore is doing the exact same thing.
Yes. All black. Ozzie Newsome, you know, he still got the influence there. But, I mean, the thing, you know, I'll just say this about the two black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. And you tell me, man, because I think what's really awesome about it is not only are there two black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, is one of them is the best quarterback in the league, and the other one has graduated to elite status. Now, Cam Newton was the MVP when he went to the Super Bowl, okay? Donovan McNabb was one of the better quarterbacks in the league at the time.
I would say one of the best at that point.
Yes, one of the best, one of the better quarterbacks. Steve McNair was the same thing and went on to be an MVP after he went to the Super Bowl. Russell Wilson at that time was not putting up those stats. You know, it was more of a defensive Legion of Boom type, Marshawn Lynch type group. But Patrick Mahomes is the standard by which other quarterbacks are measured right now. And so I think that's where the growth has really happened. And it's like, people always talked about, when are we going to get to a point where you know, they're not going to be black quarterbacks. It's going to be quarterbacks. Well, I'll tell you how we've gotten to that point, sort of, not in totality, but sort of, when most of them are black, or most of the good ones are black. Like the guy we started out talking about, Tom Brady, in real conversations, he once said he's gonna retire when he sucks. I wouldn't say he sucks, but there are real conversations about whether or not Tom Brady, the game has passed him by, whether he's a real dinosaur and he can no longer overcome his shortcomings from an athletic standpoint. The way
Mike
the game
Bledsoe
is played
in 2001.
Now, thank you. The way the game is played now is played like with a dual threat quarterback. The white quarterbacks are playing like the black quarterbacks, whether it's Josh, whether it's Daniel Jones even. It's like, fool around and find out if you think that Joe Burrow is a strictly pocket passer.
Not
you understand
close.
What I'm saying? Right, right. So it's like the game has evolved in such a way where we might get to a point, I mean, we're a ways away from that, don't get me wrong. We might get to a point where white quarterbacks are like white running backs or white cornerbacks.
Well, yeah.
Many black quarterbacks.
Well, you know, they can't let that happen because it's part of the business plan. You know what I'm saying? But like I did something about that on Game Theory the other day where I was like, look, what they tried to do was make it to where we said slow was better than fast to keep the white dudes at quarterback, right? And see, and this is where the Drew Bledsoe thing gets interesting in that time period where that's where we had that first wave of it's about to be all the black quarterbacks, right? Because those defensive ends had gotten so fast, and that's when we had the emergence of Michael Vick, Dante yeah. Culpepper, Donovan McNabb. Like, I feel like there's somebody I'm missing now, but you started to see the rise and elevation of those players. And then what did they do? Change the rules. That is when Harry Edwards makes this point, by the way, just so you know, I didn't just pull this out of my t-shirt. That is when they started making it more punitive for hitting the quarterback late, all the stuff around the quarterback in the pocket, because they were going to make sure that there was still a place for the white man to play quarterback because they think white dudes can't run, right? So they just made the pocket into more of a cocoon and tried to extend out the pocket passer era. But the problem was it wasn't just about these dudes getting sacked, right? Those defensive ends and everything else were still crazy fast, right? And so you needed the game to adjust and evolve. So what you now have, which is very interesting, every quarterback in the final eight of the playoffs this year was under 30. When you go look at the league from this season that just passed, the two best quarterbacks in their 30s were Geno Smith and Kirk Cousins. There's an entire lost generation of quarterbacks now that's gone. Like Matthew Stafford, you think Matthew Stafford got anything left? Because I don't. And I don't know how good he ever was in the first place. But there's just basically a whole, like almost 20 years of quarterback drafts post 04, right? You got Aaron Rodgers in 05, but 04, you got those three dudes, right? Post 04 till like really like 2017, like you start getting in that space. Go look at the quarterbacks. Even the ones that were good were okay. Matt Ryan, MVP, whatever, was okay. Joe Flacco, won the Super Bowl. He was okay. You get into the Sam Bradfords. The guys that popped were the guys that could move. Andrew Luck, Cam Newton. You know, you go down that whole page, and that's what wound up happening with the quarterbacks. And so they still, like, the idea that we're going to get all the black quarterbacks, we may get some more, but what they had to do was be like, okay, let's go see if we can find some white unicorns who can run.
Sure.
And then they looked around. Right. And then they looked around and were like, wait a minute. Did you know this fast white dude's all over the place?
Right. Right. Like, Josh Allen, black, white, or other. That sucker's an alien. Like,
Josh Allen, think about this. You watch Josh Allen in the way he ran the first 2 years and how long it took Brian Daboll to come around to the idea. Nobody ever considered asking that big water buffalo to run. So wild. That's like when people talk about me calling him Jaheim, I didn't call him Jaheim. I said if his name was Jaheim, they would have used him a lot differently from the start, right? Like I said, I saw North Turner had Teddy Bridgewater running the zone read as a rookie. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Once they were like, hey, why don't we put this guy on the move? Everything unlocked. At that point. In fact, this is also a story I heard about one team. I don't want to say which one it was, but they were looking at quarterbacks in the Justin Herbert draft. And they said something about, all I know is the quarterback we take is black. It's going to be black. They're like, what? Yeah, we need somebody that can move, whatever it is. We're going to take somebody that's black. They went about Herbert. They were like, oh, yeah, he counts. You know what I mean? Like, the whole game changed because it became necessary. And it's just so wild that it took them that long not to find quarterbacks that could move, but to find white quarterbacks that could move.
Well, and it's like, and want to be clear, so people aren't taking this the wrong way. I'm not playing into any kind of racial tropes or stereotypes by suggesting that black equals athletic.
No, but they think it does.
Well, right. But what I'm saying is I think black, for purposes of this conversation, for me at least, black is another way is more of a style thing.
Yes.
This style of black quarterback is now the way that the position is played. Because once upon a time, it was frowned upon to run. Ask Steve Young about that. Baddest quarterback in NFL history is Steve Young, circa 1992 to 1995.
There's an argument.
That dude over anybody.
There's an argument.
So that, he's wild. He's a runner. Like even any quarterback, like think about all the black quarterbacks who wouldn't run, who want to prove that they can win from the pocket. Now there are still some conversations dripping with racism around black quarterbacks. Ask Lamar Jackson how far we've come when it comes to the conversation about what a black quarterback is able to do in the pocket and when it comes to processing information and processing defenses. So I'm not saying that we're all that everybody's colorblind. No, everybody's not colorblind. What I'm saying is it's like when the best quarterback is a black quarterback and when the best quarterbacks either are black quarterbacks or play traditionally the way that has been associated with black quarterbacks, that to me is a point where it's like, okay, they're not an anomaly anymore. They're not an exception. They are the rule now. Are all 32 quarterbacks gonna be black? Of course not. But they're all gonna have to play a certain kind of way, and there's gonna be a lot more grace given to black quarterbacks who play that way than those who played obviously in yesteryear. But man, I know we're short on time, but I just talk about when you said you and I are the same age, we were talking about the Super Bowl in 87. I wanted to make this point. Super Bowl 22 was the first one I watched. That was the first one I actually watched.
Same.
And I watched it because of Doug Williams. Somebody told me, watch what Doug Williams is doing, and not just doing in that game or in that second quarter, which there still has not been a quarter like that in NFL history or Super Bowl history. What he was doing opposite John Elway.
Hold on. Only reason I gotta make you pause. I am already working on something for my TV show along this exact line.
Oh, all right,
so,
okay.
So I can't.
Oh, listen, that makes me feel good. All right, cool. That means I'm on the same wavelength as you.
All this we talk about now. You know what? Play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
My guy James made this point at work. How much must they have not rocked with Carson Wentz that they looked at Jalen Hurts and were like, yeah, give it a try. Let's see. He ain't even tall.
and ate the biggest cap number, the cap charge in NFL history to do it. Damn that contract we just gave you.
People must not like that guy.
But conversely, they love, like, to your point, they love Jalen Hurts, and he's perfect for that city. He's perfect for that team. But just the story of the Super Bowl and black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl is fascinating. Because the other thing I was thinking about, too, man, is like, and I'm sure this point has been made plenty of times, but I think this is 10 years. Yeah, this is 10 years.
Kaepernick.
Had he been a Super Bowl winning quarterback? I don't know that it would have made a difference or not, but the conversation would have gone a lot different, I think.
Dog, the thing I hate about it, we have forgotten that dude.
He was bad.
2012 through 2013 in particular.
He was bad. Shut your mouth. Ask the Saints and the Packers about Colin Kaepernick.
His first start was that Monday night game. I think it was against the Bears. And he killed it. And it was like, okay, but they're going to go back to Alex Smith. Alex Smith was having a pretty good year, right? Like, they're going to go back. No. They did not. And there's that clip of him. I think it was that sideline, that playoff game against the Packers where he was the first time he was dominating them. And he's on the sideline, and they had the clip of him. And honestly, we had never seen a quarterback with tattoos up and down his arms. We'd never seen that guy. Yeah. And they went over him, and he was like, yo, don't sleep on me, bro. I will never forget that. And they were this close to winning that Super Bowl. Like, you want to talk about somebody that wasn't no game manager. They were out there winning games because they had that dude. Woo, he was a problem.
He was something. He was something. And if he'd have Super Bowl attached to his name, because I mean, some people forget that he went to a Super Bowl.
Right.
A couple of years ago, when the Niners went to the Super Bowl, it was like they're telling the history of the Niners and Super Bowls. They just skipped over him. Now, obviously, conveniently, they ain't forget it. They want us to forget. They want to pretend like somebody
was like, "Is it okay? Did you ask the boss? He didn't answer." Just take it off.
Yeah, but no, man. I mean, I when it first happened, and not because it's like I don't see color, but when it was first official that was Kansas City versus Philadelphia, my mind didn't immediately go to two black quarterbacks. It didn't immediately go there. I still what?
By the way, right there when Josh Johnson came in the game, I'm like, cool, we got it no matter what.
But the reason it didn't immediately go there is not because I don't recognize the significance, is because these dudes belong there. These dudes are not along for the ride. You know, these dudes are not, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, it's like we're gonna have one for a long time. Now, Patrick Mahomes been in the NFC Championship game five years in a row and in the Super Bowl now three times in 4 years. So Patrick Mahomes is a given. When it comes to Jalen Hurts, they've been the best team all year. So I was looking at it strictly like from a football standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, the Eagles are probably going to go to the Super Bowl. Kansas City is at home again. They're the best team, and they're a dynasty right now. This was their – being a black quarterback in the NFL right now is no longer a novelty. And not just that, they are the better – if you look at the list of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, a hell of a lot of them going to be black.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at now. So – I think that's why it's less of a conversation, because to your point about Jalen Hurts, the game has caught up to them, you know, and now it's being built around, whether it's Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, where that entire organization is built around his skill set from a roster construction standpoint, from a schematic standpoint. Look at what Philadelphia has done. It's no longer fitting this square peg into our round hole. You're going to run this offense the way we run this offense, and you got to play this way. They've finally come to realize, like, if you want to win, you're going to play to their skill set, and that's the way the game has gone. So that's why it didn't jump out to me like, oh wow, it's two black quarterbacks. I'm looking at, and this is going to sound real cheesy, but understand what I mean when I say it. I'm looking at it like, no, these are two great quarterbacks, full stop. Like, there's no qualifying it. There's no like, oh, you know, he's a good black quarterback. Like, even all the things that Doug Williams, you have to go, you know, how long have we been a black quarterback? It's like, we don't even have to look at them as like, well, he's the best black quarterback, or he is a good black quarterback, or we're not counting on one hand the amount of black quarterbacks and talking about their struggles and whether or not they're actually getting an opportunity or getting a raw deal. It's like, they're the best quarterbacks. They're the highest paid quarterbacks. They're the most successful quarterbacks. The faces of the franchises. If only we can get head coaches on that level, we'd be all right.
Yeah, man. That's a good place for us to wrap, man. That is Michael Smith. Check him out on Brother from Another on Peacock. He also, I guess I ain't really talked about that here. We got the Best Man cameos. You check that out on Peacock too. You know what I'm saying?
Why don't you do something lucrative but less dangerous? Like selling drugs.
I wrote my own bars, baby. I wrote my own bars for that one. That was wild. Malcolm Lee in my house with an iPhone. That was iPhone. And my phones be doing powerful things out here, babe. But dog, I appreciate you greatly, man.
Good to see you, brother. Take care.
Likewise, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on the right time. We do this three times a week. Parker Owens and Ariel Casio joining us behind the scenes. That's like saying somebody's name for the first time on the podcast. Hope I got it right. If not, my bad. Remember, follow the right time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.